Okay, this week is two parshios combined, Nitzavim and Vayelech, which is very typical. Most years, the two portions of Nitzavim and Vayelech are combined to such a degree that sometimes they're viewed as one parsha, Nitzavim Vayelech. So they are technically two. So this, we begin here opening up with this covenant that now Moses is bringing the Jews into. This is happening on the last day of his physical life in this world as Moses, on the 7th of Adar. We just said a lot of momentous things happened. The Jews just received all of these 98 curses as a oath that brought them into this covenant with God. And now, this last day of his life, he did many things, including this covenant. So, it opens up. You are standing today, all of you before God, your God, your heads, your tribes, your elders, and your officers, all the men of Israel. You are standing today. So Rashi says, the fact that it says, today you're standing, he's gathering them before God on the day of his death to bring them into this covenant. And it says, your heads, your tribes, meaning the heads of your tribe. Your elders, your officers, meaning this is written in all order of how they were organized. So the more important ones were more ahead, your elders, and then your officers, and then all the common men of Israel. Your small children, your women, your converts, who in the midst of your camp, from the hewers of your wood to the drawers of your water. So Rashi explains in this idea of the hewers of wood that from this we derive, because the verse mentions these wood choppers and water carriers, so we learn out something that we know is written clearly in the prophets that by Gibeonites came to Joshua, and in a trick they deceived him, and they went through some type of conversion. Not exactly a conversion, though, because he couldn't accept them as they were from the seven tribes of which he was told they had to be wiped out. And since he was already in the land conquering, there was no option of conversion then. So he didn't convert them, but at the same time, he didn't want to chase them away. So he made them the wood choppers and water carriers. So seemingly the same thing happened here. Some say that these were Canaanim that came to convert, and Moses also said, well, I can't make you converts because you're from the seven tribes, but at the same time, I don't want to just push you away. I want to bring you close to God. You can keep the seven laws for the non-Jews. So we'll keep you as non-Jews that are working for us and therefore have a relationship to the Jewish people as woodchoppers and water carriers. Others say, well, Baba Chirona says, no, they definitely were converts. Because if they weren't converts, they wouldn't be part of this covenant. This is a covenant for the Jews, not for non-Jews that happen to be connected to the Jewish people. This covenant is for Jews. But obviously, they were converted and they were full-fledged Jews. But the fact that they're listed separately, besides the group of converts we already mentioned, is to teach us this concept that there was this group of people that we would otherwise not know about from the Canaanites that came to convert, and that Moses gave them these specific jobs. For you to pass into a covenant of God your God, into his oath that God your God forges with you today. For you to pass, a grammatical concept here, it's for you to be passing into the covenant. And then Rashi questions this whole idea, why we say to pass into a covenant? Because originally, when they made a covenant, they would put pieces of animals on either side, and the two people making the covenant would pass through the pieces. So that's what we say, not in the biblical Hebrew, not to make a covenant, but to pass into a covenant. In order to establish for you today as a people to him, and that he be a God to you, as he spoke of you, and as he swore to your forefathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. So Rashi explains here that why is God making this covenant to establish you today as a people, meaning that God committed, so to speak, to the forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that their descendants would be his people, but you don't always behave. So therefore he's binding you with these oaths, with this covenant, So you shouldn't do the wrong thing because he can't separate himself from you. So therefore, he has to make sure you do the right thing because otherwise he's going to have to punish you. Obviously, you don't want that. Then Rashi says, now I'm going to go back and look at these verses and explain them in the Agadic way. Because until now, I explained them in the more literal way. Now, anytime Rashi explains something in the Agadic way, it really is part of the literal meaning of the verse because that's Rashi's paradigm. He can only explain things in the literal meaning of the verse. But this is using the Agada and fusing it as part of the literal meaning. So the first thing Rashi explains is, why does it say this whole covenant you're standing today? What does that connect to what we're discussing before, which was these 90-day curses? That was the end of the previous portion. So the Jews heard these 90-day curses, and besides the 49 curses they had heard previously, and they were like, oh my gosh, how are we going to handle this? So Moses is consoling them and saying, you're standing today, you know? You've caused God to anger many times in the desert, and you're still around. Don't worry, you're going to exist. Today, and you got a way of understanding it that now became fused with the literal meaning, just like the day which exists and it becomes dark and light. So he's giving you light, and he will give you light, and all the curses and punishments will sustain you and keep you standing before him. Another way of looking at this is you're standing today, meaning since right now the Jewish people were going from leader to leader, from Moses to Joshua. So he made a standing assembly of them to give them these final words, as we see other Jewish leaders did also, learning from Moses. Not with you alone do I forge this covenant and this oath, but with whoever is here standing with us today before God, our God, and with whoever is not here with us today. Meaning, this covenant is also binding on all the future generations. For you know how we dwelled in the land of Egypt and how we passed through the midst of the nations through whom you passed. And you saw their abominations, their detestable idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold that were with them. So Rashi is saying we're using this term abominations to refer to the idols because they're disgusting. And detestable idols also is like they stink and are disgusting like excrement. Now you saw the ones of wood and stone, the verse says, and the one of gold and silver were with them because the wood and stone ones they had out in the open because they weren't worried you were going to steal them. But the gold and silver ones they hid, and that's why you didn't see them, but you know about them. Perhaps there's among you a man or woman, a family or tribe, whose heart turns away today from being with God our God to go and serve the gods of those nations. Perhaps there's among you a root growing gall and la'ana is a bitter herb. Rashi says, perhaps there's among you, meaning perhaps there's a man among you whose heart is turning away from accepting the covenant on himself. And it's like as if there's this bitter herb growing inside him. He's growing and increasing in wickedness in our midst. And it will be that when he hears the words of the oath, he will bless himself in his heart, saying, I will have peace, though I go as my heart sees fit, thereby adding the drunk with the thirsty. That's a very hard phrase to understand. We'll follow Rashi's interpretation. Well, all the commentators understand. Says, hey, what does this mean, adding the drunk with the thirsty? The Rashi says, he's blessing himself in his heart, meaning he thinks, you know, right now he's hearing all these curses if you don't follow God. And he's not planning on following God, but he's blessing himself in his heart, saying, oh, the curses aren't going to reach me. I'm going to have peace. He's blessing himself is reflexive. So the blessing, so to speak, is going on himself. He says, I'm going to do as my heart sees fit, like the word shariros is in the Hebrew, like to see it, what my heart sees fit to do. Adding the drunk to the thirsty, so Rashi explains that drunk means unintentional transgressions, like when a person's drunk and he does things without knowing. And thirsty is you're thirsty, you're desiring something. So thirsty is a sin that someone does intentionally because he's desiring it. So adding the drunk to the thirsty, meaning God is saying I'm going to add on punishments for him for that which he has done until now as if he was in a drunken state, meaning unintentionally. So since it was unintentional, I graciously overlooked them. But now that he's telling himself, oh, I'm going to do what I want and I'm going to be okay, I'm going to combine everything he did until now unintentionally with what he's now doing intentionally, and I'm going to punish him for all of this. That is how Rashi explains these words. God will not be willing to forgive him, for then God's anger and wrath will smoke against that man, and the entire imprecation written in this book will come down upon him, and God will erase his name from under the heavens. So it says that anger is going to smoke, because through anger it's as if the body heats up and smoke emerges from the nose, figuratively speaking. But literally here, Yeshan Af Hashem, which I'm saying is as anger, but it's literally the nose will smoke. Of course, obviously God doesn't have a nose or smoking or heat inside of his body, but the verse speaks in a manner of things we're used to hearing. It says God's wrath, God's kinnah, God's jealousy, which means his rage, his anger, and he's not going to forgive. God will set him aside for evil from among all the tribes of Israel, like all the imprecations of the covenant that is written in this book of the Torah. So in this, we have something very confusing here if we compare it to the previous chapter, which it's hard to follow in the English because it's really based on a Hebrew concept. But it says what's written in this book of the Torah, and this here is in the feminine, meaning English is not a language with genders. Most languages do have genders, and Hebrew definitely does. So it says, Haksuv Sefer Torah Hazeh. I'm sorry, it's in the masculine. This here is in the masculine. But in the previous chapter, when we were listing the curses, it says, even any curse that's not written, the Sefer Torah Hazos, in this book of the Torah, in the feminine. Meaning in English it sounds exactly the same, in this book of the Torah, in this book of the Torah. But here, in our chapter, this is written in the masculine. And in the previous chapter, what we just read, in listing the curses, it says this in the feminine. So why did it switch? It's supposed to be feminine, it should be feminine both times. It's supposed to be masculine, it should be masculine both times. So Rashi says it depends on where the cantillation marks, where we're told to pause and stop, and how we're grouping it. Because since there's different cantillation marks, the grouping is different. In our verse, where it's in the masculine is referring actually to the book, meaning we have this is what, this book or this Torah? So if this is this book, book is masculine, so this will be masculine, as in our situation. If this is Torah, Torah is feminine, so this will be feminine, as in the previous situation. Well, why did we decide in the previous chapter this refers to the Torah, and this chapter this refers to the book? So if you look at the cantillation marks, Sefer Torah, in our chapter, Book of Torah, is one phrase. The cantillation marks are seen to combine them. So since it says Book of Torah, the book is the this. So this book of Torah, so it's masculine, as book is masculine. But in the previous chapter, it's this Torah is grouped together in the cantillation marks. So Torah is feminine. So therefore, this in the previous chapter is feminine. There's a lot more interesting, deep concepts within this Rashi, but in the basic way of understanding it, this is what Rashi is saying here. The later generations will say, your children who will rise after you, and the foreigner who will come from a distant land, when they will see the plagues of the land and its illness which God has afflicted it, sulfur and salt, a conflagration on its entire land, it cannot be sown, it cannot sprout, and no grass shall rise upon it, like the upheaval of Sodom and Amorah, Adman, Zivolim, which God overturned in his anger and his wrath. In other words, we're now hearing this covenant, so we're predicting tremendous destruction in the land of Israel. And all the nations will say, for what reason did God do so to this land? Why this wrathfulness of great anger? And they will say, because they forsook the covenant of God, the God of their forefathers, that he sealed with them when he took them out of the land of Egypt. And they went and they served the gods of others, and they prostrated themselves to them, gods that they knew not, and he did not apportion to them. So in other words, we're saying that in the future, the Jews are going to sin so grievously that they're going to be exiled from the land. The whole land will be destroyed. The land will be a wasteland. And people will say, what happened here? And they'll say, oh, because the Jews sinned. Did this happen? Yes, it did. Every single one of the curses that God put upon us, we experienced all of them. Because at various points, we drifted further and further away. Our evil inclination tricked us and convinced us what we're doing is not wrong. And convinced us, of course, that we'll never get harmed for doing what we're doing because it's not wrong. And then we suffered.
And as we suffer, this reminded us of our relationship and dependency with God. And then, of course, as the covenant is going to continue, we repented and returned to him. So the verse said that they served God they didn't know. Even after worshiping them, the people didn't see any divine power in them. And these are gods that he didn't apportion to them. He didn't give them as their portion, or as Unglis explains it, they didn't benefit the Jews. These gods didn't give the Jews any goodness. So God's anger flared against the land to bring upon it the entire curse I've written in this book. And God removed them from upon their soil with anger, with wrath, with great fury. They cast them to another land as this very day. Remove them means he expelled them. The hidden things are for God our God, but the revealed things are for us and for our children forever. Carry out all the words of this Torah. So what are we referring to here? What this covenant is saying is that we are all responsible for the entire Jewish people, meaning until now, until this point in time, meaning for the 40 years in the desert, you were responsible for your own actions. But now, we're being given communal responsibility. So if another Jew sins, I'm responsible. I have a responsibility to help them, to educate them, to stop them from sin. So when the Jews are hearing this, and they're hearing the horrors that are going to happen to them, they're like, how are we going to handle this? You're going to punish us if someone else is sinning in their thoughts? Like, what are we supposed to do about that? So what the verse is saying is, no, don't worry. The hidden things are for God. Meaning, I'm not punishing you for hidden things. If someone's sinning behind closed doors and there's no way you could possibly know about it, you're not going to be responsible. But the revealed things are for us and for our children forever. Meaning, if someone is sinning in a revealed way, you have responsibility to keep them from sinning. And if you don't, yes, you will suffer. But this responsibility that we have over all the other Jews, that if they sin, we will also suffer because we have responsibility to keep them from sin, only happened when they arrived in Israel, had their another oath on the mountains of Gerizim and Evo, and then they became guarantors for each other. But until that time, in other words, for a bit more, a few more months, they were not responsible. Now, how do we see that in the verse? Because if you look in your Chumash on the word Lanu Vaneinu, there's dots over all the letters. When you have a word where there's as many dots and letters as there is in Lanu Vaneinu, it means remove the word completely, which means limit it. So we're limiting here and saying that this communal responsibility, yes, you will have it, but you will only have it once there is this additional oath that gives you absolute responsibility for each other.